Hello, hello, Lisa here. Since you're listening to this particular podcast, I imagine you're likely a leader in the area of talent, HR, people, culture, L&D, employee experience, or OD. Are you also a talent leader who is longing for a safe sounding board to bounce ideas off of? Who's thirsty for some fresh new ideas that will actually work? Who maybe needs to influence multiple stakeholders who don't always know what they want? Maybe you're somebody who wants to get out of their own way and who's ready for expert, ongoing, and confidential mentoring. If you answered yes to one or more of those statements, then we need to talk. In addition to my group programs, I work privately with a select few clients as their talent management thought partner. I will help you, over the next 90 days, finally create the space, the intention, and the strategy to implement an initiative that's critical to your team's longer-term impact and legacy. Let's chat and see if there's a fit. Book me online at greenappleconsulting.ca/contact. Welcome to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. I'm a talent management thought partner and results coach, wife, and mom. Talent management leaders are hungry to learn from their peers and want to hear about real-life talent initiatives. This podcast is for and by talent management leaders. My guests and I dig into successes, challenges, and lessons learned from a very practical, not theoretical, point of view. You'll discover important insights about how to elevate your confidence and amplify your influence in a role known for being caught in the organizational middle. I'm thrilled to have you listening. So let's get going and hear the truth about talent management today. Without the right people in the right place at the right time, your organization cannot meet its objectives. Today's guest approaches the discipline of talent acquisition as a strategic and essential function versus a necessary evil that should be done as cheaply as possible. My guest is Lisa Votecki. Lisa began her career in Toronto, Canada as a staffing specialist for a temporary staffing service. Then she moved on to Coke, where she built the recruitment process across Canada and helped transform the company's business model. From there, she went on to lead global talent acquisition, shipboard, and shoreside for Royal Caribbean. There, she was responsible for completely transforming and optimizing the global recruiting process for approximately 25,000 hires annually from 120 different countries. Today, Lisa is CEO and founding partner of MXA Talent Solutions, an organization built to help companies review, assess, and strategize for the future of hiring. And it turns out, Lisa and I met decades ago in a meeting where I was representing the corporate client and she was our agency partner. It's just such a crazy small world. In this episode of Talent Management Truths, you'll discover an example of how treating talent acquisition as a strategic discipline truly drives business results, how to figure out the maturity level of your talent acquisition function, and why you should train managers on how to interview. This was an amazing, fun conversation. Thank you so much for listening. Hello and welcome back to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell, and today I'm joined by Lisa Votecki. Lisa is the CEO and founder of MXA Talent Solutions. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
My pleasure. So we have Lisa.
Yes.
Here in the room here. So thank you very much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate your time. And I'd love if you would first share with us a little bit about who you are and your background.
Sure. So I have been in recruiting pretty much my entire life. I say that so that when I tell people that I started doing it before there were computers, they don't really know how old I am. So I started in staffing. I moved into recruitment process outsourcing. And at that point, I think I'd had what I would consider an accidental career. I grew up thinking I would have five children, live on a farm, and bake cookies. It turns out that's not who I am. And so as I started to discover who I was, moved into corporate, and really found a niche in terms of building and transforming the recruiting function within large corporations and working a little bit more strategically in that space. And that's what led me to start up MXA. It's truly a passion of mine to drive the strategic arm that is getting the right person in the right job at the right time.
So it's a staffing firm or executive search?
No, that's a part of what we do, but really MXA is an organization that was initially built to provide transformation, TA transformation support. I found as I was doing multiple restructures and reorgs and building out TA functions, everything from, you know, small in a small company all the way up to North American Coca-Cola and globally for Royal Caribbean, what I discovered was as a leader in the space, you're not only working to improve and transform, but you're in the weeds trying to get the work done. You've got to keep the plane in the air while you're changing the engine. So from my perspective, as I started to think about what I wanted to do next, I saw that there was a niche, someone who would come in and be my right arm if I was the leader in TA. And so that's how we built MXA. That was the purpose of it. From there, a lot of my clients were asking me to do search. So that ended up evolving out of it. And in the last year, I've been asked to provide RPO services. So MXA's kind of evolved. But for me personally, what I get involved in is working with companies on optimizing their TA function.
Yeah. So it's kind of this mentoring advisory fractional almost kind of role around that with a focus on transformation.
Right. Right down to the analytics. I mean, a lot of people don't know how to get the analytics and understand the resource modeling.
Yeah.
What's best in class, what works best based on the talent segmentation in the company. So that's kind of the stuff I dig into to pull out org structures, resource models. How do you build an accordion? You know, and when you think about expanding and contracting as the business expands and contracts, how do you figure the model? How do you work through the model to make sure that you have the right resources in place in time for you to provide the recruiting services?
Yeah, it's that elasticity that we need, right, to scale up and down. And it's so interesting, you know, hearing you describe what you do and how you do it, because it's very similar. I have a different niche and service that I offer with as being a thought partner and consultant to HR and talent leaders around talent management in general, sort of HR strategy. And so you were smiling. I could see the energy coming off of you. And I helped them dig into this.
Yeah.
That's how I feel too when I you know, get to roll up my sleeves with a partner organization.
Well, wouldn't you say that when the light comes on for somebody, when you say to them, listen, when you look at it this way, and then also just seeing it evolve. I mean, I've been doing this a really long time and you can get into the pattern, right? Oh, well, it's this much on a workbench and it's this many days that they should cycle. And so they should do this many hires. Well, the talent market changes and most drastically in the last 3 to 5 years, it's really changed. And so really getting ahead and being proactive, that's sort of what I think of as the future of hiring, and saying, this worked 10 years ago, is it still working today? And rejigging those models. So you always have to be agile. You know, you're paddling one way up the stream, you got to be willing to turn around and go the other way.
Well, and what I find with my clients, and I'm sure you do too, is they're often just so relieved as how somebody neutral, and they're, because it's hard to facilitate transformation and participate in it at the same time. Right? It's hard.
It really is.
When you're trying to keep, like you said, the plane in the air and you're trying to change the engine. So having somebody help you change the engine part takes the heat off a little bit. I wanted to go back to the scaling up or down piece that you alluded to, because it made me think of our shared kind of crossover that we just discovered when we first back in the
small world.
Yeah, want to see where you were.
Yes, I was at Manpower in Mississauga. I ran the Manpower office in Mississauga back in the day when we were primarily a national account provider, big branch. Yeah,
big branch. And I had said to you at the time, oh my God, I was at Edgelinks and I was doing the trading and recruitment function. We had these massive peak hires every August, every December, for student loan disbursements. And so I don't know that you and I ever crossed paths, but I remember, you know, the frustration just as a really great talent acquisition example of, you know, we would, you know, go through, get all these people in and then some of them, once they were on the floor, either in the call center or back office processing, would be like, oh, and they'd leave, you know, after we'd invested all sorts of training time in them, or they'd leave halfway through training and so on. So I remember taking that bull by the horns and contacting my Manpower partner and saying, can we sit down? I want to talk about how we give people, you know, a chance to see inside and what it actually looks like and feels like before they accept and before we put them through training.
Right.
And so we created this whole tour kind of scenario and different things. And they got to double jack with a CSR, and it really made a world of difference in terms of retention and fit, because then you had people that would self-select out, and that was good for them.
Yeah,
and good for manpower.
Yeah, you were way ahead of your time, because that led to, you know, I remember, and we did cross paths, because after we spoke about this, I thought about it, and we were in a meeting together discussing this very thing. And that was right after I had taken over that national account piece. So I took over Edgley's, because initially I only managed one portion of the business within the Mississauga branch, but was promoted to take the whole branch that first time stepping into Edgley's going, what the heck is this? What do you mean 200 people?
It's an animal.
And we have to do criminal checks. What? And everything back then was manual, right? I mean, there was no automation.
Well, the criminal checks, because it was
my goodness, what a nightmare, the paperwork involved in that. But anyway, I remember sitting there with you, and then fast forward, I want to say 7 years, and I'm building out a new career site for Coca-Cola North America. And we're talking about day in the life videos. I'm like, oh my gosh, we did this 8 years ago in Mississauga. So you were way ahead of your time. And now it's on a lot of websites. If you go on career sites now, the really good employment brands that are out there, the Nikes, the Heinekens, the L'Oreals, they often have day in the life or videos directly from managers talking about who they want and what they want and what the job involves. So, I mean, you have to walk a fine line there, because you can't let everybody videotape themselves and put it out on the internet. But I think it truly speaks to how ahead of your time you were, just considering that it is good for people to self-select out.
It is. It's interesting. And you know, thank you for saying that. I think it was my idea, but I don't remember. It was probably a whole group of us. But later on, I remember learning that Disney does that as well. Like, as you say, you know, tours people through. You've got to put the costume on, for instance, to know what it feels like to be Mickey in the hot sun, right? Yeah. Directing people, this kind of, right? So it's the same idea. And I think it's completely reasonable and respectful of all parties, right? To give people more tools to make decisions, right? About something that matters. Yeah. So interesting. I just love that we have that crossover.
Yeah.
It's really, really neat. So something that, you know, I wanted to talk about is that you had shared something with me in terms of how talent acquisition is unfortunately seen in many companies, not all. There's some of the ones you just named that have, you know, taken it further. But what's kind of like the sense you get sometimes around
it's really? I would say it's more often than not. I would say that more often than not, talent acquisition is tucked into HR as a function that everyone has to tolerate versus the strategic arm of the organization. And certainly one of the more strategic arms of HR. Because if you really break it down at its core, without the right people in the right jobs at the right time, your company is not meeting its objectives. It's as simple as that. And when you think about things like what we were just discussing, day in the life, people coming on site, giving it a, you know, 4 hours, you pay them for 4 hours and they spend time. I cannot tell you how many employers have said to me, I'm not spending that money. I'm not going to pay them to be on site, because they don't value the talent that they bring in, and they don't understand what it means to make good talent selections on both sides.
Well, and then it's sort of short-sighted, because not spending that money up front is going to cost you a whole lot in terms of turnover, right? And replacing, oh my God, you know, and retraining.
Yeah. I was in an organization where we had very little budget with a lot of hires that we needed to do. And I literally had to beg, borrow, and steal just to get the tools that my team needed in order to be able to function. And we received an influx of budget into the HR budget, and it all went to L&D. And I'm like, well, that's great that they're going to build learning tools, but who are they going to teach if we don't get them in? Let's talk about that. So you can tell, you know, and I think I said this to you before when I started MXA, I'm going to work with people who value what I do. Banging my head against a brick wall and working with an organization that goes, yes, we want to transform, but we don't want it to cost us anything. Well, you're not looking, to your point, at the cost of bad hires.
Yeah.
You're not looking at the compliance issues, the turnover issues, and all of those good things.
Well, and just, I mean, that's why, you know, for instance, in my last role, like my last couple of roles, it's been, you know, around the employee experience. And that's how I would communicate to people. We're talking about the entire journey of an employee, right from, you know, what their impression is of the company before they even come in, right? How do we attract them? How do we get their attention? How do we then move them through the recruitment process in a way that respects them as humans? Mm-hmm. You know, when I went into my last role, they weren't acknowledging, you know, people who were following up 3-4 times and had an interview already. They weren't back to them timely and so on. And that's not how we want people to be treated, because then what are they going to say about us outside? So I used to say, this is critical. This is a chance to get the best fit people in place, right? To help this organization meet their, you know, the key accomplishments that they're shooting for. But it's also a chance to create ambassadors of the people that didn't even get hired.
Exactly. Exactly. And I, you know, I was very fortunate. I always say I probably did most of my learning at Coca-Cola. We did, I don't know how many restructures in 9 years. So there was a lot of learning there. But the thing that most came to mind for me, we did summer hiring, similar to Agilinx, right? You've got a busy peak period. You got to hire during the peak period. When we started to do the data analytics, we actually discovered that 9 months out of 12 was peak. So there was no such thing as peak. There was only downtime. But what we discovered was that leaders on the floor, in the plants, in the distribution centers, saw these, you know, summer students or summer hires as less than often. And so they would call them at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, you need to be here by 5 or you're not getting the shift, you know, because they had an emergency. Understandably, well, there was unions involved, there was rules involved, there was, you know, lists of seniority and all of that stuff. But I sat down with the president at the time of the Canadian operation, and I shared with him a survey I did of the students that had left. And only 60% of them considered themselves ambassadors of the organization. And I said to him, how many millions of dollars do you spend in marketing to this demographic? And I'm touching thousands of them every year with your brand. And how you execute the job, how they get treated on the job, they're going to walk into a convenience store tomorrow and make a buying decision. Do you want it to be yours or the other guy? And I'm telling you, it had the biggest impact on the executive team when we put it in those terms. And that went all the way up to the North American president, who sat me down and said, I want to talk more about this. And when he realized that globally, the TA team, this is important, in a company the size of Coca-Cola, the TA team in North America touched 1 million people a year unsolicited. 1 million.
Huge reach. I mean, huge. Pay for that kind of reach.
Yeah.
You know, and here it's just a natural function of business. It's really reflective of the critical, you know, role that talent acquisition plays in overall, the journey and in the company's success. Wow. Fascinating. But I think, you know, I think we can't really fault leaders in some ways because they're, you know, if it's not sort of the main thing looking at, they're not thinking about the ripple effect of these things. And so bravo to you to be
able it falls on us to make this to make those points, right?
That's how we can add the value, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Beautiful. Well, so let's take a bit of a left turn, a little meander down the path here, because something else that I'd love to hear more about from you is that you've developed an assessment. And it's a maturity index.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about what that's all about. How do you use it? How does it help?
Yeah. I found when I was doing strategic work, so building out 2-3-year strategies for recruitment, I would try to measure us on a maturity model. And we know all the big guys, all the big consulting firms have these maturity models. And what I found for me personally was, how do I figure out where I am? It says this. Okay, but do I really know that that's where I am on the maturity model? So I built an index, really very mathematically based. I don't know when I turned into a data geek, but at some point I must have. And I've got a short survey assessment and a long one. And I use the long one when I do large consulting, where we're doing big transformations. The longer version goes out to hiring leaders. It goes out to recruiters, HR people, anybody who's touching the recruiting function. And it asks not only, is your organization doing this on a scale of 1 to 5, not at all or well? And if they are, is it important? Or if they're not, is it important? So for example, does your organization go to campus to recruit for, you know, entry-level positions? Do they do it well on a scale of 1 to 5? Maybe it's a 3. Is it important? Maybe that's a 0.
Right.
So when you're able to gather that kind of information from the users, the end users of the function, of the service, then you start to understand what's important to them, and then you figure out how to get their buy-in. So if I do a survey and I've got a bunch of leaders who go, campus recruiting is not important. And then I sit down with the HR leader who says, it's extremely important. Well, there's a disconnect. And now we know.
Yeah.
So now we're not trying to jam something down somebody's throat that they don't want. We have to talk to them about why they don't think they need it and why we think they do. And that opens up a whole new dialogue. So not only does it give you a perspective of whether you're doing basic functional recruiting or you're doing highly evolved, highly integrated recruiting with your business, but it also tells you where you have the disconnects with the business.
That's really excellent. I've seen certain assessments over the years, like not necessarily related to this topic of talent acquisition, but where it does ask that question, it's so powerful, right? Not only, you know, rate how well this is occurring, this thing, but how important it, because it's so funny because often we just go surface. It reminds me of coaching, you know?
Yeah.
What's so powerful about it is people will come into a coaching session, for instance, and then, oh, what are you bringing to coaching? And they say, this, I want to kind of solve for that. And yet that's not what I would say 99% of the cases, that's not usually what we end up talking about. Mm-hmm. Because once we sort of dig in, so that question, how important is this? Is it important? Goes deeper, goes beneath the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. So currently we run this sort of through SurveyMonkey, but my dream is that we will find a developer who really wants to get their hands wrapped around this, and we're going to turn this into a really simple integrated tool that the customers can use more frequently.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be cool. That's my dream.
I just thought of somebody we can talk offline.
Okay.
who might be kind of interested in that, okay, or have a resource for you.
It's cool.
Really cool. Yeah. Yeah. So that sounds like a really important tool for people, especially if, you know, for listeners, if you're looking at your hiring, your talent acquisition practices across the organization, and there's some complexities and so on, and you're trying to, you know, get people on the same page, and you need sort of a systematic way to do that.
Yeah.
It's a great tool for you.
Well, and Lisa, it goes back to what we first said, which is, you know, when we think about TA not being seen as a strategic arm. So isn't it better to go into a conversation understanding how your vice president of finance sees recruiting?
Yeah.
Or how the finance team does? Because we can segment it by function. So we can say, listen, the people in your accounting organization think that you're doing this really well, but they think it's not important. They think you're doing this poorly, and they think it's really important. You guys better get together and figure this out. So it opens up conversations that are more strategic, which lends the purpose of developing the value. You know, TA is adding value every day, and having those conversations, I think, is critical.
I agree. Beautifully said. Okay. All right. Well, so now let's kind of move our attention to something that's we both noticed in the industry. I'm a small business, so I don't see it the same. I work with contractors for my team. You've noticed something that's become more and more prevalent in the industry, behaviors of candidates. Can you speak to that? This was up with my clients too.
Yeah, it's so interesting because initially what I was hearing was from candidates who would get online and talk about how companies stopped responding to them and how they'd gone through so many interviews or they'd filled out applications. And this is true because we use technology and we don't treat people. So to your point earlier about the whole experience starts with reaching out to the candidate. It's like an ecosystem of touch them, bring them through, let them go, bring them back, right? It's a cycle. So that was sort of the first thing that I started to delve into is, you know, how are we leveraging technology in a way that doesn't dismiss the human contact that's critical to talent acquisition? And then as I started doing search, because my clients asked me to do it, I hadn't been on a desk in a really long time. So here I am, the CEO of the company, reaching out to do interviews with people, and they set up an interview and then they don't show. And I'm like, what's happening here? And recently I dove in with one of my RPOs. I took a desk because I wanted to really understand what the challenges were for the recruiters. And I literally had a 50% no-show rate for people that I set up video interviews with. 50% of the people who took the time, I'm not talking about passive candidates, to apply to a job on a website, answer a phone screen, agree to an appointment, accept an invitation, and then not show up.
Well, I've got some ideas on that for you.
And it's at every level. It's at every level. It is not, we're not just talking about frontline, but it happens at the VP level. It happens at the director level. They just vanish. It's almost as though we've lost the capacity to have any accountability for the choices we make. If I have an appointment with you, Lisa, to interview with you for a job, and I've taken another job, I'm going to call you.
Yes.
And say, thanks so much for your time. I've decided to take this other opportunity. People are just like, yeah, I don't want to deal with it.
It makes me really sad.
It makes me sad too.
I hear that and I think, oh, because, you know, here you're talking about how do we make sure that technology is not completely removing the human element, and how do we show respect to people and bring them along and let them know they're valued. And here, you know, when it doesn't get reflected back in, it's like this, I don't know that, like, what's going on for people in that case where they just, they don't value the human element. They're not thinking that, hey, there's a human on the other side that I've just stood up who wasted their time preparing and looking at my resume and my profile. And, you know, what it makes me think of, and I'm sort of cautious about even bringing this up, but I deal with ghosting both for the podcast and with prospective clients.
Wow.
Not a lot, but it's pretty upsetting. Like I do these pre-calls, like you and I had an initial pre-call to discuss, is it a fit? Does it make sense? And do we have lots to talk about to make it an engaging episode? And there's been more than you would think, people where we had this great conversation and I say, are you interested? Would you like to come on? I'd love to have you. I can send you a formal invitation if you would like to. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And I send it to them. And then I wait. And then it's not like I'm sitting here waiting. I've got rather busy, but I have a way to check and follow up and go, I haven't heard from this person. So then I go and I'll follow up maybe once or twice and never hear from them. Now, it's fewer than the people that actually do come through, but it's a shocking number given the level of these people are typically director, VP and up.
Yeah.
So I find that really surprising, especially when I'm, you know, trying to give them a platform and, you know, to so they can sort of demonstrate their thought leadership, but also on the potential client aspect. So it's not the same as a candidate talent acquisition, but some people, you know, it's really fascinating. I had one person that I've been in conversation with about something and she's so warm and engaging, genuinely interested in something that we might work together on, but then she'll just go away for months at a time. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? Right. And I follow up once a month and then finally, oh, thank you. Thank you for not giving up on me. I've just had a heck of a time. Okay. It's interesting though, that there's no thought to even just say, hey, have it not ignoring you. And I'm just not ready to talk. And I'll follow up with you.
And it's all generations. You can't blame a generation.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all generations. It's all levels. I actually said to my youngest son the other day, I feel like we've lost the capacity to have civil discourse. That even to the point of just saying to someone, I'm so busy, I'm going to get back to you, I promise, but I'm busy right now. Like, how difficult is that? I don't know. But I think it, from my perspective, very, very surprising for people who are taking the time to look for a job, because finding a job is not easy. And everybody thinks it is, but it isn't.
And on top of that, we're also interconnected.
Yeah.
Right. So someone who ghosts you or doesn't show up, and then who knows how that person's name might come up again later. And you're going to say, wasted 20 minutes of my time.
Yeah. One of these days I'll tell you a little story about that. But yes, it's a small world. It's a small world. And we get out of it 10 times what we put into it. So, you know, just treat everybody the way you want to be treated. You don't want to be ghosted. Why would you ghost somebody?
Yeah, that's so interesting. You just made me think of something, and listeners, I'm being really transparent here. I think what I'm going to do next time I have a pre-call with somebody who might want to come on the podcast, for instance, I'm going to say, you know, are you interested? If they say yes, I'll send you something. And would you please do me the courtesy of not ghosting me if you decide that you don't feel confident enough to do it? Because that's often the case, what I've learned, or that you're no longer interested. Just do me the courtesy of just saying, hey, Lisa, I'm going to take a pass. That's all. Just so I know when I'm not spending time chasing you.
Interesting that you say that. So not confident they can do it. So they just avoid it. It's avoidance, right? It's just all about avoidance.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just
interesting.
Then I don't have to think about how I'm feeling about this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that goes to, you know, fear a little bit too, that sometimes people, if they realize they ghosted or they're like, oh, I just don't want to think about it. And so I'm right. not even.
Well, right? It's a vicious cycle, right? Once you've done it, you know, and it's been a week, how do you go back?
Yeah.
Right? So again, accountability, avoidance, those are the things I think that drive this.
Do you think, I've mused with some of my clients and partners a bit about this ghosting thing in the recruitment world. Okay. Mm-hmm. Candidates ghosting, this comes up because I know a lot of people in this space. And, you know, some of them seem to feel that it has been worse simply because the market was really a candidate market, right? Like, you know, for the longest time, like there were so many opportunities and, you know, people could quit and move for a lot more money and do that. So why would they bother, right? Like they sort of attributed this terrible behavior to being spoiled for choice. Now, I think that might be changing a little bit economically. We're recording this in December 2023. What are your views on that?
I have been in recruiting through really hot candidate markets and really hot employer markets. I've been through both multiple times because economics is cyclical, right?
Yeah.
I have never seen this. So it's not about the market. It's about the way we are. I mean, we could get into a really deep socioeconomic conversation about this, but I really believe that with our lack of connection through remote work, more remote work than in-person work, so we're not spending a lot of time with other human beings other than our family, which is awesome, and we should not lose sight of that. And we spend a lot of time like this,
yes.
not looking. I walked, and I'll tell you this, we were in Mont-Tremblant for a weekend, and we were at the Starbucks, and we went upstairs because the lower level was packed. And as we came down the stairs, you had a view of the whole seating area of the restaurant. There was 50 people in there. Not a single person, not one, was looking at another person. Not one. I stood on the stair. I almost took a photograph. I stood on the stairs. I looked down. I looked at my husband. And I said, nobody's looking at anybody. They're all looking at their phones. And I said it quite loudly because sometimes I like to stir the pot. And literally half of them looked up at me like deer in the headlights. And I just started laughing and I walked away. And I'm like, that is our problem. That is our societal problem. We go out for dinner. We look around. We see couples having dinner together. They're not looking at each other. They're barely speaking to each other. Our friends that are sitting there, the table of friends, you remember going out with your girlfriends? We were talking.
Yeah.
They're not talking.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. It makes me a little bit crazy. And it's, you know, it's interesting. We have a custom in our house. Well, since my son's 17. So, you know, since he was little, my dad was with us for many, many of those years. But we have dinner as a family. So I purposely didn't get him enrolled in any activities that would mean that was sacrificed. It's just my thing. I'm not judging other people. They're doing it on the run at all. So I want to make that clear. But for us, that was really important. And so to this day, we take dinner together where we can. Now Patrick's working, so occasionally it's a little tougher, right? But we actually light candles. And we may only be sitting there for 10, 15 minutes eating our dinner, but we're conversing and we're not on our phones. Even with my husband and my son knowing how important it is to me, and they've agreed that it's important, occasionally it's kind of the phone. I even feel the lure sometimes, right? Because somebody will say something, we're like, oh, let me look that up, or I want to make a note. Like, I got to put that in Google Keep. Oh, we're out of this. Let me put it on the grow. You want to just pick up the phone right away. And then I'm like, nope, hang on. We're doing the phone thing. No, they got to go away, right?
Yeah.
We're done here. This is our reprieve.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So even for somebody like me that really values this as much as it sounds like you do, you know, that human connection and getting away from the phone, I still feel tempted too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I'm not blaming social media. I'm not blaming the phones. I couldn't live without my phone. It keeps me connected. It means I can live my life and work, which I love. I just think that it has created. And maybe it'll evolve. You know, it's funny because I was just saying this to my son the other day because he was getting all worked up about the world. And I said, you know, the pendulum has to swing all the time. It swings far this way and then it comes back this way. And then for a little while, it settles in the middle.
Yeah.
And then it keeps going and then it comes back and then it settles in the middle. And that's human nature. And so we're going through a phase right now where we've become, because think about it, Lisa, the smartphone is not that old.
No.
Right? Yeah. I mean, 15 years, maybe 10, yeah. Barely a generation. I mean, my kids, my oldest kids, their first phones were flip phones. They didn't have smartphones. So, yeah. So, you know, it's barely a generation which is adapting to this disconnectivity that they have. It's masked in connectivity, but it's truly disconnecting from people and it's connecting with information. And so I imagine at some point, people are going to really talk about this in terms of the human impact of not being respectful of each other's time.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's fascinating. Well, we could keep going down this road. This really is it's such a massive thing confronting us, I think, right now.
My suggestion to anybody who listens to this is do what I do and hold people accountable. So if somebody ghosts me, I message them. So you didn't show up for our meeting. Everything okay? Hope you're doing well. Good luck with your search. 9 times out of 10, they respond, oh, I'm so sorry. I meant to call you. Because you guilt them. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
well, a little bit of guilt. Because occasionally there has been an issue and somebody was like, I remember one person actually had a car accident. Like it was legitimate. That is the rare occurrence. So I always try to be gracious. I hear you as well with following up and you know, and sometimes you'll get an apology and other times, you know, not so much. There's nothing. Okay. So let's take a right turn now.
Okay.
I really want to get into this last topic, which both of you and I feel very strongly about, which is the power of training leaders and managers in how to do hiring and selection well.
Yeah. I think my best experience with that, or the thing that really struck me back several years ago, was within the company, we were building out leadership training. And you know how much money we invested in training managers on how to deal with millennials. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So now they're all managers. We forgot they were going to grow up and just become leaders and want offices, not shared space. So we really saw that there was a gap promoting people from individual contributors to leadership, bringing new leaders into the company. We're going to build this leadership. And Lisa, we need you involved because we want to teach them how to interview. How to interview or how to select? No, we want to teach them how to interview. Okay. So you're going to be on the calendar for one day. You're going to get a day. We're going to build out this training deck. You're going to teach them we're going to do role play. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. So about a month before the first leadership training launched, I got an email saying, we're going to have to cut you down to half a day. You're going to have to do it from 9 till noon. Okay. Well, am I going to teach
you
from 9 till
noon?
You've been there, right? Anyway, it turned out that we got an hour and a half.
Oh.
And essentially all we did was show them what a standard interview guide looked like and what to expect from their recruiter. That's what it boiled down to. And you continue to watch leaders not understanding the impact of the hire that they make. And when you have recruiters that are true partners, talent leaders, they can really work with managers, not in high volume areas, which is, by the way, where it's really important, but in those more corporate areas, they can really work with the manager on, tell me more about what you're missing on your team, what kind of competencies you need. But managers will still have those unconscious biases that they've never been shown how to understand. And that's one of the biggest issues is that unconscious bias. I knew a girl in elementary school whose name was Caroline and she was too pretty and she went after my boyfriend and I'm never going to hire anybody named Caroline, right? Like those are those little voices in the back of your head that you don't even know are there. I had a vice president tell me once that he doesn't hire anybody out of the pharmaceutical industry because he made a bad hire once.
Oh, yes.
Straight out conscious bias. If you take the time to sit with leaders and help them understand the overall concept of creating a team that works together and complements each other. If you teach them how to dive in to understand what that person is saying to you during an interview, I always say to hiring managers when I'm working with them, your job in an interview is to allow that person to show you the best that they are. That's your job.
Help them get an A.
Help them get an A.
Not
look for something to be wrong with them, right? You've seen it, right? So that's one-on-one. I can do that. But overall, as an HR function, I really, really think that it's a gap that we haven't spent enough time thinking about. And I take it all the way to having leaders' bonuses and their performance actually based on their talent selections. You know, if you're, I don't understand why, because again, I'll go back to my favorite. By the way, our mutual friend is the one who taught me this a long time ago. Right people in the right jobs at the right time. And if your managers don't know how to get the right people into the right jobs at the right time, then you're never going to meet your objectives. It's not all on your TA team.
Yeah.
And sometimes companies will blame TA for turnover. Well, you brought us the wrong people. Oh, no, 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 no. You made the selection. I shortlisted for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, another piece too, where there's a lot of kind of finger pointing too is when the pool is small, or, you know, there's the repeat people in there. What other ways? And you're trying every possible thing to attract in different people, right? Through different vehicles and so on. And it's like, well, your talent acquisition is not attracting the right people for us to choose from.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even before they hire somebody.
Yeah.
And I think that the way to manage that is through partnership, through, as you say, training, really building awareness about the criticality of this function, that this isn't meant to be an afterthought tucked into the corner of HR, like you mentioned earlier. This is really critical for you to invest your time, your thought, you know, put that power against what you really, really want, what you need, and partnering with your TA, seeing them as a partner, and they'll meet you halfway, right? So that this isn't one person or the other, like it's all of us in here trying to make this happen.
Yeah. And helping managers, I did a very, very brief how to ask behavioral questions with a team. It was a manufacturing company I was doing a small project with. And these guys, they're building airplanes, right? They're mechanical. And we're sitting in a room and we're talking about how to ask a question and do a follow-up and listen for an answer. And literally jaws were hitting the floor because I was role-playing with one of them. And he was trying to be difficult.
Yeah.
And he was trying to give me difficult answers. Again, I don't want this to succeed. I want to show you it doesn't work, right? It's kind of how they think. Mm-hmm. And I was able to literally keep asking him open-ended questions, almost coaching questions, to be honest with you. I kind of had to go down a different path with him. But they all kind of sat there going, wow, like the things we uncovered, the things you discovered about this person. And I was like, yes, and this is what you can do, because it's not my job to talk in the interview.
Right.
I like to talk.
Yeah, well, we're trying to surface what's this person all about, what's their experience, and more importantly, how, you know, what can they bring? What's the potential?
Yeah.
Right. What do they see as the opportunities here? Like, what if we actually talk about what they plan to do? Right.
Yeah.
You know, give them enough context to have them kind of weigh in. I mean, that's powerful. That's helping people even see their own potential. Right.
Right. I mean, I had a manager recently tell me he hired four people. And the interesting thing was the people he didn't select, you know, for reasons that they didn't smile enough or they didn't seem interested or they didn't seem to want to do it. But I hired these four people because they're really good. So let's get them hired. And then to say, well, they're 3 weeks in and we don't think they're going to make it. What does that tell you about your selection criteria? Right.
Well, In one organization I was in, it was actually my leader, and I was in a senior role. I was interviewing for somebody that would report to me, and my leader did not like the woman's shoes, disapproved of the shoes, felt they were too frumpy, and that she, for somebody, you know, interviewing at that level, they should not be wearing that kind of shoe. And in the same organization I had, they were having trouble hiring a lead of sales. And I know somebody personally who's incredible. Well, in the end, I got in trouble because I'd recommended her and she came in and she has a bright shock of pink hair in the front. And they were like, how could you think that, you know, that would fit into our organization? And I was like, it's, I don't understand.
Well, yeah, no, I know. I get that. I think one of the things I learned in, you know, some of these large corporations, I'm sure you did as well. There's a fear of holding leaders accountable for talent selection when they're really good producers. So they're either really top in sales or they lead the best sales team. They could be leading that team with fear, for all we know. They may not be the best leader, but they're driving numbers. And so let's leave them alone. And it doesn't matter that they have a 40% turnover when everybody else in sales has a 15% turnover. It doesn't matter if people have filed complaints. It doesn't matter if they haven't selected, you know, the right people and people don't get through probation. What matters is they're driving the numbers. And that's the fine line we walk, Lisa, right? So yes, I can stand here all day and say TA is critical to your strategy and we want to help you make the right selection, but I can't step on the toes in my company of someone who's driving really big results from a revenue perspective.
Yeah.
So, well, fine line.
The good news is that when with some people like that, it does eventually catch up.
Sure.
We'll only tolerate the, you know, a person's need to like being a bullet in the china shop or, you know, like constantly falling down on 80% of their, you know, their KPIs, mm-hmm. save for the bottom line ones kind of thing. And eventually I do find it catches up and it's addressed.
Yeah.
But it's usually not, doesn't feel good for anybody involved.
Right. But I do think that having those conversations, you know, we talked earlier about the recruitment maturity index, having answers and data. Data-driven decisions are always better, especially when you're dealing with corporate. So if we have data and information that says you don't think that TA doing this is important, and we think it is, and now we can have a conversation about how we can bridge that gap, right?
Yeah.
And then that leads to, and it goes back to, we're talking about training, not bad leadership, but that goes back to if we can show them why it's in their best interest to make better choices and work more collaboratively in the talent selection process. And we can show them that results from a revenue perspective and growth perspective can be there if we do it right.
Absolutely. That is our role ultimately.
Yeah.
For listeners, I'm sure many of you are smiling and listening and going, yep. That's the key. And sometimes it's daunting, you know, how exactly do we do that? But I think you've given some good examples today already. So,
thanks.
Well, we have come to the end of our time together. I want to thank you very, very much for digging into all things talent acquisition with me today. It was a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure. Honestly, Lisa, it was great to have this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your colleagues. Better yet, head over to iTunes and let us know. When you subscribe and leave me a 5-star review, not only do I glow from within, but more people will learn about the show and why they should listen. Until next time, keep telling the talent management truth.